publisher. He took notes, and I have the pamphlet that he gave me somewhere, and maybe I can actually look at it and use some of the material. But I want to begin tonight. I would like to keep this slot available for a Vada Manchinach Monday nights, if anyone that wants. Okay, they're each, theoretically, they're each mutually exclusive. But it's a good hechruch for me to think through so many things I learned while I'm here. I had a very big zchus that came to me, Shomer Psoim Hashem. I had been here for 6 years. Rabbi Grumblatt left in 2000. I'd gotten here in 94. And over that next year, without Rabbi Grumblatt here, there were so many things I couldn't figure out. There was a lot of hostility, resentment in the school. For those of you who can relate to a teenagers in high school being angry, those of you that graduated from here, we eliminated most of those negative stimuli, and it was done with, you know, tremendous pichus, not my pichus. So I didn't know what to do, and I went over to I asked a couple of gedolim who's a great mechanech, and they gave me a name, and that person happened to be coming into Miami, and they told me, I asked them, who would you hire as a consultant? They told me Rabbi Feuerman. He's the best out there. It sounds like my grandfather. So I was pretty chicken. You know, I sent him. I didn't have email back then. I had faxes. Sending a fax. And some of the many things I learned from him, I guess one of the main things I learned from him was this inyan of extrinsic and intrinsic or intrinsic rewards and consequences. So just to open up with a chazal on the parasha, it happens to be that this is one of my favorite shmuzim of all time. It also, I used to say this shmuz over every year at the opening assembly for the high school in my early years. And subsequently, I just want to let you know it's the opening shmuz in the Chiddush Alev on Parsha Shoftim, which is this parasha. So it's like, I was so excited. And it prompted me, when I saw the shmuz, prompted me to start this week. I would like to thank Yossi and Morty for working through how to structure this. We decided to open it up to anyone that wants to come. I figured that, we have around more than 10 people can be like, what do you call it? But if I invited 10 people, then it would be like one of these elite groups. Didn't want to create any kind of exclusivity and animosity. So it's pretty funny. We have 11. It's just funny how it worked out. We really wanted to have between 6 and 10 at the VOD. And I was nervous to, I would just open it up. So I have 20, what do I care? But I think that I'd like to thank them for helping me work through how to structure this. So Baruch Hashem, everyone's happy. Those that could come, we're here. Those that can't come, maybe they'll hear it on the recording. But I want to start with this shmuz from the Reshiva. So the pasuk starts there, shotrin v'shoftim v'shotrim tasim. You have to make judges, and the shotrim are the officers. The officers are the ones who enforce the law. So the Medrash says that just like shoftim v'shoftim, there's a juxtaposition. They're placed together. And the same way the shofet has to be a chacham menavon, has to be a talmid chacham, so too the shoter needs to be a chacham menavon. Now, just like the shofet has to be a talmid chacham, so too the shoter, the officer, has to be a talmid chacham. And if the shoter is a talmid chacham, when he gives the malchus, the shochet is one giving the malchus. So by being a tamei chacham, the muka, the one who's getting the malchus, will be able to take the musar from the shochet. That's the end of the chazal. So the Rashiva made a diak, very very insightful diak. The point of this is not to say the shmooze, just to see what where we're going. He said that it's mashma that if the shochet would not have been a tamei chacham, then the one who was getting the malchus would not have been able to do tshuva. He would not have been able to take the musar. And the question is, why not? If you tell someone you do something wrong, I'm going to whack you 39 lashes, and the lash is serious stuff. You don't get misa, you get malchus, but they used to calibrate the malchus how much you could take short of death. So they calibrated it. Oh, yeah, this person can handle 19. 20, he'd get killed. So you can handle 19 malchus. You can imagine what state of being you're in by that 19th malchus, by the 19th lash. That's pretty serious. So why won't the punishment itself be enough of a deterrent for him to do tshuva? So the Rashiva said, because like anything else, he'll figure out next time, he'll do it again, but he'll just make sure Bezdin doesn't catch him. He'll make sure he doesn't get caught. This time, Edom were there probably, and what if we have malchus yet? It's probably with Edom and Asra. So next time he'll make sure that he does it without Edom. You know, he's not enough to do tshuva. Now the next question is, how will he be able to do the musar? As Morty reminded me of the shmuz. He, by the way, Morty Anton remembers me saying this over. I don't remember when. I said this over, or you just knew it on your own?
No, I heard him say it.
You heard me say it. Right? I don't remember saying it in your presence. But everyone who learned Malchus knows that the person getting Malchus has his back to the shoter. He doesn't even see the shoter. The shoter doesn't even talk to him. It's just the Malchus. So one would think that just the opposite. You know, the bigger the, you know, the more of a bulvan that he is, the more you whack him, the better it is. He's not even communicating to him in any way other than the lashes. Yet still, And I think the one more of art is that people don't usually like the disciplinarian in the school. Disciplinarians are the ones who I hated the most. If you're going to do tshuva and feel bitter about something, it's unlikely you're going to get it. You're going to feel that when, you know, the tough guy comes over to you. I don't want to say names, but you think about who the tough guys are in every school, and that's not the person you're probably going to take the musa from and do tshuva from. It's going to be from the nice guy. And here, the person's going to get the tshuva from not the shofet, the big tamei chacham, the shoter, the one who's doing the disciplinarian. So the Rashiva pointed out from here that when the muka, when the person getting the malchus, he sees the pain, he feels the pain as the shoter is whacking him. He feels that grimace, he senses the truth, and this will get him to do tshuva. So I just want to segue from this. Let me ask you all a question. You ever get angry at somebody? Who hasn't gotten angry at someone? Why don't you take out a gun or a knife and kill him? I'm angry at him. Why don't you take out a knife and kill him? What do you say? What? Please go to jail. Are there any other reasons?
You're not at that level. Like, you may hate him, but you're not at the level that you yourself are going
to
do something.
Okay, so we have the two big reasons here. One, he'll go to jail and maybe suffer other punishment, you know, capital punishment or worse. And you're saying because you're not angry enough, or as angry as you are, you're not, don't feel it's worthy. It's appropriate to kill for that. So if the answer is because he might go to jail, so and that's the answer I was hoping somebody would say, is that you think about it, if the person thought he wouldn't go to jail, let's say they would say, like, everyone gets one free card, one get out of jail free. They still have that in Monopoly, one get out of jail free. So you get out of jail free, and nothing will happen, so then you would kill the person. if somebody would tell you that the reason why I'm not killing you is because I don't want to go to jail, you would run far away from that guy. Because the moment you turn your back and he's sure that no one's watching, you're dead. And so that's the extrinsic motivator is not as strong as the intrinsic. Extrinsic means the outside reason. But the intrinsic reason is you yourself feel it's not the right thing to kill someone. So it's the same thing, like, you know, take a teacher in a classroom. So why should the kid pay attention? So if the reason is because if you don't pay attention, I'm going to send you to the principal's office, I'm going to take a point off your grade, and you get a terrible report card grade, and your parents are going to hassle you, and you're not going to get on the dean's list, and you're not going to get a National Honor Society, and whatever other things you come up with. So those are all extrinsic consequences, and they're, you know, they may get some compliance, but as soon as the person thinks that you're not going to catch them, or which, you know, or those consequences will not be enforced, then you're not going to get much compliance. So if one can find an intrinsic, like we used to have this, just Eschatoi Ani Masker Hayom, that famous time when I first faxed Rabbi Feuerman. So we used to have in this yeshiva, this before all your time, a fantastic point system that was very elaborate. It was genius when it was implemented. Rabbi Grumblatt was here when we implemented it. And it seemed like such a great system. If you come late to Minyan, if you absent from Minyan, you get 3 points. If you come late to Minyan, very late, you get 2 points. If you're only a little bit late, you get 1 point. If you had your shirt untucked, it was 1 point. If you were talking during davening, at 1 point. If you didn't have your hat and jacket, it was 1 point, I think, for each. Yeah, sneakers was 1 point. If, I think sleeping was considered 1 point. We had it all figured out. Now, I'm talking about high school. And we had a great system. If you hit 20 points, it's an automatic suspension, with the chachma being that we weren't the ones suspending you. It was the system was suspending you. We had learned that it's not us, it's the policy. It's not me. I'm not doing it. I'm out of this. You know. And then we also built in such gavaldika ways to self-regulate. We called it self-regulate. It was a distortion of self-regulation. How do you self-regulate? If you come 5 days in a row on time, you can remove 10 points. If you daven for the Yomud, you get 3 points off. And it was, 10 points off, come 5 days in a row. So the system took care of itself, and everyone had a code. And every day, the computer, you know, someone tracked all this and entered it on computer, and they printed out, can you believe it's the same school that you're in? We printed out each day, everyone had the code, and they saw how many points they had, so they could self-regulate. And many kids, and also on Sunday, you can serve an hour detention, if you choose, we didn't make you, we were out of this. You could serve an hour detention, and you can get 10 points off. So what do people do? I'm recalling, I'm embarrassed, it's even recorded. And we had this system, and people often would serve a detention on Sunday. They would wait until they got 19 points, of course, and then serve the detention. But sometimes they miscalculated, thinking that they got 19 points on Thursday, and now they have to have Friday clean, otherwise they get suspended. And they miscalculated, they were late, an extra minute late. Oh, and the big fights. No, you were late, you weren't late. Because they were fighting for their lives, they don't get suspended. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. Here was an elaborate extrinsic consequence that literally I watched this in retrospect, looking back, I watched this take over a school. this became, when you asked about the school, that was the school. If you would wake a kid up, any kid in the high school, it was 7 through 12 back then, you ask a kid to talk about this, you know, Yeshiva Torah Chaim High School, they would just talk about this point system. It caused such hostility. It's like not imaginable that anyone could think of it. And so what we did when Rabbi Feuerman came, and we were analyzing a lot of components of the school, this just being one of them, he advised us not to drop it because there's probably some value in it. I remember one parent coming in on a Sunday afternoon. There was attention. I think we had one, a basement edge guy was hired to sit in the room, and he just had to sit there. And the guys had stayed there for an hour. They were literally climbing the walls. They weren't allowed to have headphones. They were climbing the walls. One parent, I was in the office, I remember, one parent came to me and said, "Hey, Pal, can you call me for a second? Is everything okay? Just call me for a second." He says, "Look in there." There were like 15 kids at the time. And he says, "Look in that room. You mean to tell me those kids are being rehabilitated right now?" And they were killing each other. So I realized this was an example of an extrinsic consequence. And this, I had a raging thing. So we announced that we're still having the point system, and only the students who show that they're unable to work intrinsically will still use the point system, but only for certain kids. In other words, if it develops, gets out of hand, then we would put you on a point system. It happens to be, and I'll take your point, it happens to be that we never found a boy subsequently to put on the point system. We said that we would. That
there's still a point system?
There was never an official ceasefire. We're still in a state of war.
Still pulling out.
We're still in a state. I think that was 2001. And since then, we have not ever found, you know, a student to use it. We totally went the other direction. And the big argument I got from my Haverim and colleagues around in the system, because after I discovered this, I was like, oh my gosh, every one of the high schools in the system were using this system. I didn't create this system. I got it from elsewhere. So I called up everywhere that I had had some connection, and I was pounding away to everyone who would listen to me. And I made a roshim on a bunch of places.
What else was being done instead of the points? What was being done?
If a kid came on time, we gave him a yishkayach. And if a kid came late, we said, come on, davening, you gotta come on time, what's going on?
And that worked. The kid wasn't just davening, come on.
So the argument was, the argument I got from others out in the field saying, like, what do you mean? What you're enabling them to come late, because what are you doing to them? So I argued that, okay, what's going to happen? We still had people coming late and missing minyan. We still had that. Just somehow you felt that you were doing something to them. It's like, it's okay. We had 18 kids in a room on a Sunday afternoon killing each other, but that was okay. You know, the fact that they were missing minyan, we koshered it by putting them in a room on a Sunday.
Because there was a consequence.
Because there was a consequence.
So the kids realized we're doing something wrong.
But there wasn't greater compliance to Kinnira Lee. There was not greater compliance. We still had people afterwards, on Ad Hayom Hazeh probably, who have missing minyan. But, and the consequence was, talking to them, sometimes calling their parents, sometimes having a meeting with them, sometimes, other more intrinsic type of things. I know it gave the appearance for the first couple of years. I was like, people attacked me, out there. I was fighting. Rav Freeman was, very helpful to me to help me lead the attack back. But this was the classic example. Good. Yes, you were.
So I don't understand the problem with this extrinsic, because you get the people to comply, and then And then Rebbe was saying how if it's taken away or something like that, then they don't do it. When someone's not looking, they won't do it. Okay, so you try to enforce as well as you can. You get them to learn what to do, and then eventually when they're mature, they'll continue doing it because they find out that it's right.
Because that won't work.
Why not?
The system won't work because it only motivates. They only put on an outward show that this is how we're going to behave. And
yeah, until you mature and realize that it is actually the...
But if you work with an intrinsic system, the intrinsic system will help them mature and realize.
Why?
And
if you're
all
not going to
Shabbos
for 3 years, why would you realize?
What?
If
yeah.
he's not going to Shabbos for 3 years, why would...
Because,
no, he's going
because
to
if the atmosphere is that he wants to go to Shabbos,
he doesn't.
If it's intrinsically the intrinsic system, which I don't know what it is, creates it that he wants to go to chakras, then he will naturally improve. It works on
before
the inner quality.
What intrinsic is? Why? I don't see why the extrinsic.
Well,
work.
Let's
because talk. They'll do it. They'll comply. They'll get in trouble. They'll realize that they can't do it again because they don't want to keep getting in trouble. And eventually they'll mature. But these are for kids. When they mature, when they get to 17, 18, they'll realize that oh, this whole time it's because chakras is actually a good thing to do, and then they'll start doing it.
I can't say we went to zero consequences. That really isn't the case. We still have some consequences. Esty? Hello? Is anyone in the kitchen? Hello? Mrs. Palgon? I think Yossi needs tending to.
Yeah. It creates an us versus them mentality. In this whole
he's searching for help.
This whole extrinsic.
The left. There.
The whole extrinsic system creates an us versus them. This is us. This is a school. That's them. We don't want to be them. We don't want to be
no,
like
we,
them.
The question that Yossi's asking is that do the extrinsic motivator.
They might not like it because no one likes a consequence, but that's the whole point. That gets you to comply. You'll do the actions and then eventually grow up and you'll keep doing it because it's the right thing.
So it either doesn't have a higher compliance rate, you can pick your answer. It doesn't have a higher compliance rate, and it doesn't, it's not as efficient. It doesn't work as fast. Look at the prison system. Everyone goes back.
The school is still not doing it fully intrinsic.
Rather than if you don't show up, you're getting you feel?
The basic rule that I saw in the secular research is basically says as follows, that they're not the secular research shows that extrinsic motivators are not puzzle. There are times where we can use extrinsic motivators, but they say like this: in when an extrinsic motivation or reward is used for something that there should be or there probably is a natural intrinsic value, the research has showed that it decreased the intrinsic motivation. For example, you take a second grader, a third grader. Little kids are, you know, when have a thirst for knowledge, which is everyone has a thirst for knowledge. Learning knowledge, I don't mean Torah learning, I mean any learning, even for secular people. Learning something new, it's considered one of the innate pleasurable activities. That's considered pleasurable. When someone learns something, people go to museums. I mean, it's something that they want to learn about. They're like, wow, it's very exciting. It's a pleasurable thing to learn something that you want to learn, that you want to learn. So if this was a big hack by the father and son learning, so there's such a big fight years ago because every kid was so excited to go with Tati to father and son learning to go learn. And
what could be better. You're going to learn with your father, and then you go to these places, and they're giving you like tons of prizes. I heard this nice that the kid was learning so well, and the Rebbe wanted to give the kid like $20, to learn. The kid was ready to learn without any money. Giving him the $20 actually would demotivate him for learning. That's what the research shows.
The next time or that time?
Well, for right now, he wants to learn. So you can tell, okay, you want to, let's go to father and son. If you come, I'll give you a prize. So, okay, he said, okay, because no one's going to turn down the prize. So the research showed that, after they analyzed it, that prize weakened the intrinsic motivation that the
because
child had.
The pleasure of the prize is less than the pleasure of the learning?
I don't know if we could analyze the reason.
It made it superfluous.
It removed
the reason. It changed the reason from the inner drive.
Right, it made it extrinsic, and he no longer wanted to do it for intrinsic reasons. He wanted to do it for extrinsic reasons. And then when the extrinsic reasons, you can't keep up with the extrinsic reasons your whole life,
right.
as the extrinsic rewards, they weaned off the extrinsic rewards, he was, the child's actually had less intrinsic motivation.
If the intrinsic motivator is more powerful than the extrinsic, like I understand it does, but why would the extrinsic now decrease the intrinsic? Do you really want it?
So David's saying says swear. Tell him the swear you said.
That it changes it makes it superfluous. It changes or removes the child's inner drive from it, and just makes him feel like he's doing it for other reasons rather than something that'll last.
Why does it change it?
But isn't that what kind of
why is it transferred from intrinsic to extrinsic? What transfers?
Because
why
what's
switch?
What's more exciting?
Other reason what's driving him?
Right. Dangle
that's
two
the whole
things
idea
in front of a child.
The chinuch hamuser is to bring out the intrinsic reasons.
You start off low with
why want to go for both?
And eventually
the money is now.
So
why
is
that?
Why is a reason?
So that's a good point. He asked, "Why is ever mitosh lolishma bolishma? Why do you ever give a child a prize or something?" So I think the word is that on something that the person has no intrinsic desire to do, an extrinsic motivator would help.
How can you possibly make a klal? It's GHBH. Some kids are.
Yeah, there's no klal. There's not a klal that you should only use intrinsic motivators.
No, but
there are times that
for everything, there's a group of kids that are going to be naturally like motivated to do that. But there's going to be another group within that group that's not going to want to do it. So,
right.
So what are you going to do? You're not going to have an intrinsic motivation. So then only half the kids will gain.
Well, sometimes you have to find something that's hitting the rove. You can't, right? You have to differentiate as best as you can and try and pick and choose a motivation that's going to work for most of the kids. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Some kids you may actually be hurting in your description. A kid who's not intrinsic, has no intrinsic motivation to do it, and you don't offer any extrinsic, he remains dull and doesn't motivate. Well, that kid could use a little bit of extrinsic. So, a good teacher or Rebbe would privately go over to that kid and say, do something with you. But you got to, for the klal, you want to do what you think is going to work. It depends on the class. That's why it's very, very difficult. There is no rule to use. Like every year, this is what I do. Because you have to constantly recalibrate and see what works.
If you have no intrinsic motivation, give them extrinsic, somehow intrinsic.
Yeah, we do hold bitosha lo lishma balishma. There's value, there's truth to that. Bitosha lo lishma balishma. We don't believe that tzaddik to do it only for the lishmadik reason.
Yeah,
again,
right,
that was
right.
On the madriga.
Isn't that for different reasons? Isn't that attacking on Torah? So you just end up blanking it because maybe it's some mystical reason or just not because something's very good. Okay, eat cake because it'll give you money. Okay, well, cake tastes good. So you end up saying it's automatic that you like it. But that wouldn't apply to something that you won't necessarily like. Meaning, let's say, well, dominating. Okay, you just like dominating, right? It's not enjoyable. It's not so. Right? You tell me about dominating.
converted into davening, it's not going to change anything.
Sometimes davening, a kid is just not mature enough to appreciate davening. So that's a little bit hard. You know, the school treated it like a, you know, they treat it like a class, like any other class. You know, they don't grade the student on how he davens. You know, it's like you have to come to class, so it's a class. They give him a grade in it, and if he doesn't do well in the class, and they base it on the grade is based on attendance. I don't know if you liked it. You might not like this. I'm just saying the system that this school uses is that they grade you based on your attendance, and you can get an A, a B, a C, a D, or an F. If you get an F, the school did one other trick, is that they said that the school does not offer any optional classes. All classes are mandatory for graduation. So if you fail a class, you're not a candidate for graduation unless you make it up. Had this maestro with a kid, you know, many years ago, and he was not in the mood to study for an enrichment final, so once a week class, a computers class, and he said, "You know, I'm out of here. I'm done. Graduated. I'm not coming in for the final." I said, "Why are you doing that?" He goes, "I'm done. I don't care. It's fail me." I said, "Well, that's ridiculous. Take the test. You'll study for an hour. You'll pass." No. So he didn't. So he got an F in the class because the teacher gave him an incomplete, which turned into an F when he didn't complete the final and take it up. And then he said he totally didn't care. About 2.5 years later, he wanted to go to college. So he needed his high school transcript. He couldn't get his high school transcript because he needed to have graduate. How to say graduated. He didn't graduate because he didn't take that final. He failed that class. And so he came back. He was in, you know, a different state at the time. He came back into Miami. He came to my office. He was laughing. He told me, "Rebbe, I knew you figure out how to get me back here to take that final." And I had to go to that teacher and get the book. And he had to study chapter 11 of that science, it was computer science, whatever. And like 3 years after high school, to be sitting in a room taking a silly enrichment test. But I guess that was strictly extrinsic. I don't think he did it because, you know, he wanted to do it. But, you know, I didn't, you know, sometimes extrinsic motivation, that's a standard. You know, the standard, you want to pass the class. You want to get a diploma, you have to pass the classes. They say also if it's a natural consequences are logical. So, you know,
in that situation, and when you can't just be mocho, give him a passing grade,
it's a, you know,
the school's not going to fall apart.
Mocho, you know, you have to have a standard. Like I feel like a certain integrity. You know, I want to be able to look you in the face and say, "Yeah, you have to take every one of these classes," but I don't want to lie to you, and I know you don't have to take these classes. So I feel I have to be consistent to everyone. So if I'm nice to you, then why not nice to him? So you have to be. You know, grades are not, you don't give out grades. Your grades are earned. So you gotta earn your grades, you know. I gotta earn my grades, you know. I can't, you know, you should have pays your salary. You know, you can't get paid a salary if you don't work. So, like, you know, you come to school, you don't deserve a grade. You earn a grade. So get the grade, take the test. And what's the big deal? Oh, you have to work for a month. So work for a month.
And for the rest of the students with their Lubin, a few days ago last week, right, I think we ended up saying that in order for an external motivation to work, there has to be some inner reason, some maybe desire, some want of some sort.
Yes.
Something has Rebbe fit that into the book.
No.
That kind of answer only works if there is
some inner desire, like some automatic wanting, some automatic intrinsic.
Yeah, we said that the external or extrinsic motivators is sometimes will help breed some intrinsic motivation. But I want to say something else.
Breed, but it only can be if it's also intrinsic.
Huh? What's that?
The external motivational. It can only help if it's combined with intrinsic motivation.
Yeah,
well,
I think
things have intrinsic value to
them. The guy has to want to come dominate. If he doesn't like dominating, so inside everyone, you know.
It happens to be that schools that. If there's an overemphasis on grades, it could be very distracting to the intrinsic motivation. It's very possible to have an overemphasis on grades. So, ideally, you would want the teacher, Rebbe, to not have an overemphasis on grades. Yeah, you want to have assessments. You want to be able to assess how the kids are doing. But I could see classrooms who are barely too much stimulation of grades, and it could demotivate the kids, the learning environment. It's very that could be a little dangerous.
Does anybody find it challenging to implement the intrinsic, motivational system into a classroom that varies in the level of the students? Meaning, if it was like an olive shear. So the guys are into it. Everyone's on the same page. So I hear like it being much easier to regulate the class with just the information, because to them that's exciting. But to a guy who's having trouble learning, is, in a class where the people are ahead of him, like I can see the teacher being very like challenged, like. Being able to give a class that to both students.
Even in an olive shear, there's a lot of stress, because there's the top of the class and then there's the bottom of the top of the class, and that could be very stressful for those kids, and it's demotivating and kids stressed out. And I'm sure the teachers and Rebbeim for those olive classes are dealing with a lot of the internal politics of the kids, and that is also you have to be very careful about. But no, I didn't find, if I had, I probably taught more non-olive classes, and it's very easy to motivate people. Most kids, I mean, if not all kids who I taught, I don't want to say all, but I would say that with very few exceptions, most kids are very easily, intrinsically motivated to learn. Think about it. Why would they be in our school? Why would they be in our school if they weren't motivated? There obviously is an intrinsic motivation. First of all, you have to get into the school is screening to check that this is where they want to be. And I know when they're with their friends, it's hard to see it. But, but privately, most of the kids are very motivated to want to succeed in learning and davening. They want to get up from davening. I remember a funny story. I didn't believe in any kenosis. I felt that was created hostility. And then one time someone convinced me that certain things you just have to make a kenos for. So in the old building we had, the dormitory was upstairs. So I said, there's no reason for it. And it was very big. We felt it was like such a terrible lack of supervision. We had no one supervising that dormitory during the day. So we announced that a dormitory student has to go up to the dormitory. Okay, fine. It's his room, whatever. But a non-dorm kid to go up to the dorm, you have no reason to go up there. Gravity is not going to make you go up there. So anyone, we announced, the first time you're caught up there, it's a $5 knas. I remember this, I made an exception for this one. Second time you're up there, it's a $10 knas. And the third time you're up there, $25 knas. So I figured, okay, I announced it. So a kid comes over to me. This was, I know, we have after Sukkot. He says, Rebbe, that was the best schmooze I ever heard. He opened his wallet, took out his wallet. He handed me two 20s. He says, Rebbe, here's $40. Said, there's no way you're catching me in that dorm three times this year. But even if you did, I just want to pay up in advance. And he was always scared to go up to the dorm because he didn't know what was going to happen to him. Now, we never told you what was going to happen to you. We just said, you're not going to go to the dorm. But once we announced that it was 5, 10, 25, so he just took out $40, gave me the things, and he was very good. He was very happy with it. But that's the problem. When you just offer the extrinsic consequence, you take away all of the stress. Yeah, you know, the best reason for a kid to stress by not coming to Minyan is that he knows he should come to Minyan, and he's fighting with his Yetzer Hara to get up in the morning. And you're right, you may not get the compliance now from him, but that kid, as soon as he's in a more mature and able to, you know, be strong about it, he's going to be a better Minyan goer than that other kid who was paying out his knossos and his points and his fighting with everyone for not getting up. You know, it doesn't look as good. It's true, because maybe sometimes it'll be less compliant, but yes.
I don't think that it's intrinsic motivation. It's just that it's a different extrinsic motivation. It's fear of the unknown. He doesn't know what's going to happen to him, so he's afraid to do it. That's not intrinsic motivation.
Which one are you talking about?
The last one for sure, but I think a lot of the
pick one.
The last one for sure. A lot of the dormitory.
The dormitory.
The guy didn't know what was going to happen. It was extrinsic motivation. The guy was afraid that if he goes up there, something's going to happen. Now you give shot what's going to happen, so he's not scared anymore. But
yeah,
it was
right,
still
right.
Intrinsic motivation.
I was not comparing that to intrinsic.
I'm saying
I was just showing that the extrinsic
a lot of the
consequence is like, okay, you know.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the things are like that. When he goes to davening, he's afraid of the point system. If you don't give him a point system, so he's afraid, he doesn't know what's going to happen. Now you tell him shot and
you
say
you're saying they're both
of.
Extrinsic.
Yeah, all the
no,
things.
Well, let's say what happens is you go over to the guy and say, no, we feel it's very important, and to go to
so that's going to motivate the guy?
No,
that's not, huh? Yeah, most kids in yeshiva growing up from the bar mitzvah, they think davening is important. They may feel it's hard for them to stick with those slichas and the old davening, but they really do.
That's going to motivate him.
But the fact that he's afraid is in a way intrinsic because it does come from himself. He's creating the fear in his mind.
Right, so when he realizes at 18 and 20, they realize that
he's scared of
$40. When he gets to 20, he realizes, now I'm out of high school, I'm going to be afraid of it.
And then by that time, he'll generally go on his own. If it's set up in the right way,
grades are taken very seriously. I don't know, maybe you can say that's not real extrinsic people care about. It's a rating of themselves.
It's an accepted standard in schools that is a grade on your class. Although there are some yeshivas, I shouldn't say some yeshivas, there's one yeshiva that I know, that in Muncie, that they for Kodesh, there's no grades. There are report cards. There are report cards that are not graded, just evaluations of their performance that are sent to the parents.
Do you think that could work here?
No, because the world. I am not the Manal now, but when I was the Manal, I wasn't smart enough to be able to be the. You know, the outcast of the world. So we're working with a conventional system and trying to be, you know, wise about how to implement traditional systems. That, there's one rabbi, I forgot his name, rabbi with an R. He figured out. Huh? Yeah. No. No, Chassidish fellow. I forgot his name, and you know, no grades because he. I know in Harvard and Yale, there's no grades.
There's no grades.
Pass fail. Every course is pass fail, and the svara was when I was branching in New Haven. So there were a lot of yeshiva guys, Chaim Berlin, you know, who were my age, who were in Yale. They were really yeshiva guys. They got into Yale and they stayed in the yeshiva because the yeshiva had apartments and they weren't going to stay in college campus. And he told me why there are no grades, because Yale holds themselves to be so elite that anyone who gets into our college and you pass our classes, that's enough. It makes no difference if you get a 70, 90. If you can pass our classes, you're already chashuv. So they didn't need that motivation of grades. It's pass-fail. You have to pass. There's a standard. But you pass, you beat that standard, you're good. So I always thought, wow, I wish I was in Yale.
Because then you could be a C student.
Huh?
You could be a D student then.
Yeah. Now they held that their standard was so, you know, exclusive that if you pass our classes, you're in. That's all you need to do. Which was a certain way, you know.
So what happens in a situation where a kid is not in the mood to follow the rules today? He's not in the mood to pay attention. He went to sleep late last night. And so what's his motivation today to not disturb everyone else?
The menschel kite. And he's having a hard day. I'm not talking about learning now, right? I'm talking about secular class. I'm talking about public school, whatever.
Yeah,
be a citizen, and tomorrow's another day.
You're everyone expecting them to be a bomb listener at second grade. Like that's too much of an expectation.
Yeah.
I think so. People are working on themselves for the whole life to be
a bomb listener. I personally didn't care about that in 12th grade.
What?
You have grades
the rest of the class is not learning because I want to sing now, I don't know.
Because what? Because
I want to sing now, so the rest of the class is not going to learn.
You sing?
So you didn't, that would not have, if I would sit down with you as your Rebbe, and I would say, I want to give this shiur now, it's like one of the best shiurim I ever had, and no one could hear because you're singing. So you
but
would
you
say,
know, you, didn't do anything to me,
you would say, I don't care.
I don't think
I don't think I ever. I'm not talking about a kid's angry or didn't take his medication, you know, and he's not well. There's always one or two kids that you have to be, don't fit into the norm, but, you know, that's a, you know, you have to be able to, I'm almost afraid to say this because that's not tonight's topic, but the secular statistic is that 90% of student misbehavior is teacher induced. So the fact that I have a student in my class who's singing and he's of your, you know, intellect and demeanor, pretty normal, and you're singing in my class, so if I would go home that night, I would think that, okay, I'm doing something wrong, that Mendy is not motivated to learn what's going on in that class. He chooses to sing, so I have to figure out what to do to motivate you to learn.
So 90% of the time, it's the guy who knows Chiddush has been doing kind of for 20 years is fault, as opposed to the kid who's immature. That doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Is it something that...
Because 20 years you're doing the wrong thing.
Then
is it
not
something the teacher is actively doing, or is it something the teacher could have done?
It's usually omission or commission.
No, but if the teacher
it's, now, I'm not saying that the teachers get it right 90% of the time. Teachers get it wrong.
90%.
A lot of they do get it wrong. Of course, you can't be perfect, and there's going to be misbehavior, but the teacher needs to know. I'm not saying, therefore, don't consequence the kid and don't try and teach the kid, but the teacher needs to know that 90% of the misbehavior is their fault. Your lesson wasn't on target. You thought that you thought they were it was on target, assuming the teacher prepared. I'm assuming the teacher who prepares. So the teacher thought he was gonna have a lesson that was gonna be great, and it wasn't because he overshot there. He overshot or he undershot, and you have to deal with that. Don't take it out on the kid. That doesn't mean you should just roll over and tell the kid, okay, it's my fault. You know, keep singing. You know, you have to try and do what you can to, manage the class. So you need to have some management skills for when you mess up. When you mess up, you have to do more management. I went to a year, this is when I was in Kolo, there was a Thursday night, the Reshiva said, and they used to pay $20 for Mishmar. You know, Cole didn't have to come back at night after 7. The second Seder ended at 7:30. And you weren't obligated to come back at night. Except Thursday nights, you can come back for an hour. If you came back for an hour and a half, they paid $20 Mishmar. Okay, 1 year, they had Rabbi Feuerman come in to give sessions on Chinuch. And he said, if you go to that class, he'll let it count towards as Mishmar also. So he was in Yeshiva, but not in the Beis Medrash, so we weren't learning. But okay, so he sort of paid us to go to the class. So so the classroom was classroom management. I thought, wow, what a great thing. I was planning on going to Chinuch, so I'm going to take a class in classroom management. Sounds like a great idea, right? That was my first opportunity. So he gave a class in classroom management, and he started on how to prepare for a lesson. So someone asks, you prepare for a lesson, but what has it to do with classroom management? Because he wouldn't get to it. And the next week he spoke about, you know, the first thing, the second thing you do for the lesson, and then how to analyze and how to assess the lesson, and how to do guided practice, and how to give homework, and how to do assessments. And this went on and on all year. You know, the end of the last class, after like 7 months, someone said, okay, I'm sorry to ask this question, but I've been asking it all year. What does this have to do with classroom management? Where's the classroom management? So he finally, right before he finally says, don't you get it? Said, if you know how to deliver the lesson, you don't have to do any classroom management. Zero. No classroom management necessary. You have to learn how to deliver a lesson. And as he always also likes to say, the perfect classroom, the perfect lesson has still yet to been taught because we're not through Baruch Shalom. So we can't deliver the perfect lesson. So, but we have to try our best.
So kids don't have Bechira? Like,
they have Bechira, and that the Rebbe would tell the kid, you know, you have to do the right thing. I know I should challenge you better. And but if you are singing in my class, then something's wrong with my lesson. I mean, I'm giving you a compliment because I would feel, from what I know of you, yeah, if you are singing in my class, my lesson was bad.
The last thing you just said.
Now you're thinking, aren't I right?
Or there's a fact.
It's depressing that like no one knows how to finish.
Not nobody. Not nobody. Sam just said you know, Rabbi Dreyfus's class is a gavaldic.
No, it's typical. I'm asking why is it good? Shouldn't the test be replacing?
What?
I'm just wondering why, if people are motivated in Rabbi Dreyfus's class, why are we still motivated if the test should be replacing that?
If what? If
then the test be knocking up. The thing before you said extrinsic motivation knocks out the intrinsic.
Excessive doesn't mean that. Sometimes you have some extrinsic motivations in life. They say, you know, a person gets a salary, it's an extrinsic motivator. I'm not a doctor. He's a doctor because he wants to save lives. But take away his paycheck, he probably wouldn't go to work.
But maybe so, he started off as not needing that.
Yeah, no, but people are multifaceted, so there's a little bit of both. So, you know, we're not against it. Just it has to be calibrated. You want to do it what's absolutely necessary, not more. So that's the basic part. But
for it to be effective, most people in our Jarvis's class have to need tests to be that motivated. Otherwise.
No, the people who are intrinsically motivated, you need less extrinsic motivator. That's what I said. They need less extrinsic motivator. So you don't want to mess it up. You know, by father-son learning, you know, father's taking a kid to learn. He wants to go learn with his father. Beautiful. Let him go learn with his father. You don't have to shower them with extra things because he doesn't need it. So the word is, don't give more than what's needed. So, like if I would have written tonight on the sign that I'm having this vibe, and I would have written, you know, barbecue, ribs, steaks, hamburgers, yeah, all these things I've written on there. Yeah, more people would have come, but. You want people to come because they wanted to come to the VAD. So I decided to write light refreshments because I didn't want to exceed on the extrinsic motivation, but I didn't want to leave it blank. I wanted to leave some extrinsic motivation, but I didn't want to exceed it. So I wrote light refreshments. That was my cheshbon.
So
now, I don't know what this was considered. It could be didn't get credit for light either.
It's more than light.
Yeah, it means more than light.
How does Onesh
really
heavy
refreshments?
How does Onesh
refreshments?
Onesh?
Medium. Okay, we'll continue in the car. I promise to get guys back by 12. But Onesh, one car has to leave by 12.
Camp time.
This is a big issue. Onesh is you know, pure punishment. A lot of mechanchim, you know, as a teacher, as a rebbe, your job is to be mechanich, you know, not to be a dayan. Sometimes the situation calls, you need to be a dayan. It should be very, very rare. Punishment, I wouldn't even ever use that word anymore. I haven't used that word in, you know, years. Pure punishment that's not a natural consequence. A consequence is a consequence, not a punishment. A punishment is like, oh, you did this, you need to serve 5 years, 7 years. You know, so there would be very few punishments. If I would hear someone use the word punishment, I'd say, okay, they're old schooled. If I was interviewing the person, I would probably not hire them. If they just used the word punishment, I would suspect that they're very old schooled. There's a consequence is when a child learns the natural consequence. So if you don't do your homework, you know, you're not going to be able to know what's happening in class the next day, and then you'd be very frustrated. So you see why you should do your homework, because otherwise you won't know what's going on. If the child's having difficulty doing his homework because there's no one to help him, and he has no pens or has no pencils, you know, you have to try and find the source of the problem. But natural consequence. If a child is fighting during recess, then he's not able to play, so that child has to sit on the side because he can't play now. It's not a punishment, it's just a natural consequence. But if the child is, you know, fighting with his friend and therefore he has to, you know, write 100 times, I will not fight, that's a punishment, it's not a natural consequence. And sometimes it's hard, you have to try and find a natural consequence. It's a Ribono Shlom, Mida Keneged Mida. You know, you have to. The Mida Keneged Mida is a, you know, it's more of a natural consequence. There's like David HaMelech. I said this about last year. David HaMelech, he didn't exercise Seichel by going to Plishtim to hide from Shaul. So the natural consequence is Hashem took away his Seichel. That's what the Midrash says. Took away his seichel. It was like a natural consequence. You don't use seichel, you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have seichel. If you don't use the seichel, then Hashem's not going to let you have the seichel. It was a gift. You have to use it. It's a natural consequence. So that's how I deal with punishment. The punishment is like totally not in the picture. Now the Baruch Shalom has, you know, the Zechiv Misa, the Zechiv, and is that a natural consequence? I don't know. Sometimes there's punishment. I don't know. There's Onish. We believe in Skar and Onish. So I don't know where that fits in, but you know, but that's not chinuch.
Is that because Hashem? I mean,
I assume that's because it really is good for us. It really is good for us because then we, the way the world was set up, we want to get Olam Haba, so He wants to get us back to Olam Haba, so the Onesh takes care of the kaparas. Get the owner. I assume that's really the pshat. It's called Ma'adavir Rachman with Tavavir. I said it really is good. It's not real. It's not a real punishment. That's a good question, though. Where does punishment fit in? But it really doesn't.
Maybe the lower level, no? To do it for.
If we...